community. I'm humbled by that, and I'm really glad that you have the power back, and I appreciate that call. I do. I can't imagine 6 days without electricity. My God. Woof. And you brought up another good point. It's going to happen yeah. again. Unfortunately, that's the route we're going.
Yeah, it's time to get a strategy. That's what I've been thinking about myself. Like, you know what? I need a strategy. And maybe the strategy is owning a shovel. That's where I'm going to start.
I think that's a good start. That is a good, solid start. and the ice box also, mm-hmm. man, and rural Oregon. I'm kind of whining being here in a city. You can't imagine. That's another game on its own. And we are mm-hmm. just about at that time where we got to wrap it up, finish it off. And we really appreciate you tuning in. This has been The Gap. I'm Tammy. Thank you, big thank you to Esbernay Mitchell for being on the show. To learn more, you can go to spreadblackjoy.com to learn more about spreading black joy and joy in general here in Portland. Thank you, Althea. Thank you, Sonia. This is The Gap. Have a fantastic weekend, and take care of each other.
Thanks, yeah. everyone.
Hi, I'm Queen Ida, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on the radio. Your spot for Cajun and Zydeco music, Bon Ton Roulette.
Working as good now, yeah.
I would like to thank that Chicago was not a promised land, but it was definitely a short-lived heaven for black people.
Join KBOO on Wednesday, February 24th at 6:30 p.m. for an online panel discussion featuring the filmmakers of the documentary BAM, Chicago's Black Arts Movement. Panelists also include Chicago poets Angela Jackson, Illinois Poet Laureate, and Yusani Eugene Perkins, esteemed poet and youth advocate. Register online to attend this free KBOO event. Everyone who registers will get a link to the full documentary for up to a week before the panel for viewing. Again, that's BAM, Chicago's Black Arts Movement, online panel discussion on Wednesday, February 24th at 6:30 p.m. For more information and to register to attend the panel, go to our website today at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
As you may have heard, this is KBOO Portland. It's 9:02 a.m. It's time for the Veterans Voice with your host, Marvin Simmons. Stay tuned.
You can fight a war with drones. You can fight a war with loans. You can fight a war with gas or cans of paint. You realize that the game is compromised if you think that this is something that it ain't. We got images of murder that don't manage to disturb an international order that is bordering absurd. And no one gets the freedom they were told that they deserve till they realize that freedom's not a noun. It's a verb, it's a verb. Freedom is a verb.
It's something never finished, never done. It's something you must make, it's something you must take, it's something you must constantly become. Well, this weekend revolution, it's a radical inclusion. It's a holiday of popular revolt. It's the social interaction of inconsequential actions, using faces to replace a silent vote. But lower pay and higher rents, another kind of violence, the violence of silence and of greed. It's the violence of feeling your irrelevance, revealing every way in which you never will be freed. It's a verb, an action and an urge, as fertile as the barrel of a gun. And it happens out of need, it's a fire and a seed, and its terrible potential has begun. Constantly in jeopardy, it's something you must loyally defend. But isn't it demeaning when your well-intended meanings mean your means will have to justify your ends? So improvise a barricade of furniture cascading as a carnival of helmets in the flood. For the bottles can be filled with either gasoline or lager or detergent that'll wash away your blood. It's a verb, freedom is a verb. Something never finished, never done. It's something you can fake, and it's something that'll break if it ain't something that you constantly become. It's a verb, an action and an urge, as fertile as a barrel of a gun. And it happens out of need, it's a fire and a seed, and its terrible potential has begun.
Portland calling. Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, 104.3 FM Corvallis, 91.9 FM Hood River, or on the World Wide Web at KBOO.FM. And you can also hear our earlier shows at KBOO.FM/Veterans Voice, one word. I'm Marvin, and our friend Sonia is engineering the show today, and I really appreciate it. That song, Freedom is a Verb, is by Daniel Kahn, and I've used a song of his before to start our show, and Sonia told me that she knows him, and I thought that was pretty interesting. Small world, Sonia, small world. I was watching the news this morning and saw a very, not very horrible story about our sisters and brothers in the Asian American community. They're being attacked by racists at a higher rate than it's been before, and that just shows that racism is still alive in this country, that the attacks on Asian Americans, on our black sisters and brothers, and our Latin sisters and brothers is just getting higher, and it got really worse during the Trump regime. And I just hope that people keep their eyes open, and if they see any of this happening, to step in if they can, and stop this madness of our families being attacked by these racists. I like to watch this show on OPB, is called Finding Your Roots, and it's by Harvard professor Henry Louis Gates Jr. And what it is, he has people on the show, and then he'll go back and follow their lineage back to their ancestors as far as they can go. And he's a black professor, and the show is very good. He has people of all nationalities on there. And the one I watched I've always known that racism in this country is a real bad problem since I was a kid. And this show that was on, I think it was Tuesday of this week, and he had Pharrell Williams, who I didn't know who Pharrell Williams was. He's a young black man, and he's a singer and musician and award-winning producer. He's very young. I think he's like 30 maybe. And they were going back and finding his roots. And I watched it as they were going back, and Mr. Gossett was saying, this is your grandfather, and this is, you know, on grandmother, great grandfather. And when he got back to, I think, great grandfather, you could see the look on Farrell's face changed as soon as Mr. Gates was talking about that they were slaves, and they were talking about the man that owned something like 92 slaves, I think, some horrible number. And you could see the look on Farrell's face as he was looking at these pictures of, and they were talking about his ancestors, and just the look on his face and the way he was talking, you could tell it was really, because he didn't know a lot about this, and you could see the look in his on his face and in his eyes that this was really, really bothering him. And they had a picture of the man who owned his great grandparents, and you could he just kind of sat back in his chair, and his face just changed when they were doing this, and you could tell this was just something he had never heard before. And he was talking about, Mr. Gates was talking about different things and all this, and this is the first time that the show had ever been stopped, that he stopped the show because it was causing so much pain to Farrell. And he talked about, you know, after the show had been stopped and everything, and the young man had left, and he started talking about, he says, this is the first time I've ever stopped the show. He said, I could tell that this was really hurting Farrell, and that he didn't want to have this pain go on anymore. And he was talking about that in a later show, they went to him again, to Pharrell Williams again, and were talking to him about the show and why he stopped the show and everything. And Pharrell was saying about, you know, the way it made him feel and everything. And he said something that really, really got me. And he was saying that they people had to work together, that people, blacks and Asians and Latinos and Latinas, we all have to work together to end this racism in this country and the violence against our sisters and brothers. And I thought that was very interesting, and I thought, you know, here in Portland, we support our sisters, we support our brothers, and that we do stand up for them. You know, you can just look back at the Black Lives Movement here in Portland, that we got in the streets and supported our brothers and sisters, and we got hit for it by the feds, you know, and I thought that that we're going to stand up for people, our brothers and our sisters, and we're not going to let that happen to them, even though it's, you know, with Trump gone, I hope that just gets, you know, pushed down into the dirt and buried. When these rioters, these insurrectionists, or whatever you call them, criminals that attacked the Capitol on January 6th, that, you know, Trump and Giuliani and those freaks, you know, they just ramped that crowd up and told him to go down to the Capitol, and Trump, you know, he said, I'll be right there with you, and, you know, he's a big liar anyway, and you know, they went down there and they attacked the Capitol, and they, you know, five people died, and the federal government is going after them and catching a lot of these people, and they're going to be spending some serious time in prison, some of them, you know, for beating on the cops and breaking windows and stealing stuff out of the desk of the senators and House of Representatives, and hoping that this will kind of push these people back. I think it's like five or six Proud Boys have been arrested and are going to be put in prison, I'm pretty sure, for the violence that they did. And you know, you just wonder where in the mindset of these people that they were able to be manipulated to do this crime. You know, where did they come up with the idea that it was a good idea to attack the Capitol, to try to hunt down Congress people and senators? You know, they were hollering things like hang Mike Pence, and they wanted to go after Speaker Pelosi. You know, one woman right on TV said they would want to put a bullet in her head. And these people are being rounded up, and they're going to be pay a horrible price. But, boy, that's a horrible tactic, whoever thought that out, to attack the Capitol building. You know, most of the people in this country aren't going to think that was a good idea to do that. You know, five people died. One young woman was shot in the chest and killed. You know, it was just a bad move on the part of the right, the fascist right wing in this country. And you know, they tried to blame it on Antifa, and people saw right through that. That's just, you know, just nonsense. And now Biden, he's really talking to the countries around the world, you know, trying to kind of mend fences with these countries that Trump just, you know, attacked and went after. And one of the things that I'm really glad that they're doing is going to get back, hopefully, into talks with Iran over the nuclear issue. And I've always been anti-nuclear, you know, like I've been anti-racist since I was a kid. I remember seeing pictures of Hiroshima and Nagasaki after the United States dropped the nuclear bombs on these people. I remember seeing all these children and elderly and, you know, just completely annihilated, a city just brought down past its knees. And when Biden said he wanted to get back into that, you know, I was really, really happy to hear that, because boy, there's no winners when there's a nuclear war, and I hope that never ever happens. And I'm, like I said, I'm glad they got back into the they're going to get back into the talks with Iran, and I'm really glad to hear that the government's trying to get back into the Paris climate change also, because that is a real problem. I watched the on NASA landed on Mars, and I thought, you know, that's really interesting. And it took a lot of work to get that thing up there and land on Mars without, you know, crashing and sending pictures back. It was like, I think they said it takes 11 minutes to get the pictures from Mars back to Earth. And I thought, you know, here they are looking for a place to go after this Earth has been just beat up so bad by businesses and whatever, you know, our air's getting bad, our water's getting bad, our animals are dying off, people are getting sick from the horrible things we put in the food and all of this. I thought, why don't, you know, instead of doing what they did, going to space, you know, let's fix our country, let's fix our planet up, let's make our planet inhabitable again. And that's going to take a lot of work, but I think it's really important, you know, that people start thinking about, we gotta do this. And I think the Paris Accords will help that a lot. But we have to get countries like India and China, these big polluters, and the United States, these big polluters, you know, to get on board, and let's get this better. Let's you know, let's patch up the Earth. Let's just patch up the Earth. I wanted to talk about that too. I'm going to talk a little bit about racism in the military, because 1 in 5 of those protesters, criminals that attacked the Capitol, were either active duty military or they were veterans. And the racism, this white supremacy within the military, I want to talk a little bit about that. But I want to go back to slavery just for a little bit before we before our sister Sonia plays the next song. I've found this after watching the Finding Your Roots. I decided I was going to go back and look up on the internet about this horrible thing of slavery. And Americans, they know that there was slavery, but they don't know how horrible that African Americans, or they weren't even Americans, they were people from Africa, were treated. And so I went to some stories in Southern University online articles about this, how these people were treated. And, you know, they weren't happy-go-lucky people in the fields picking cotton. They weren't happy-go-lucky people cooking, cleaning the houses of their masters. They were treated just horrible. You know, they lived in shacks that maybe the plantation owner built or they had to build themselves. They were wooden and they, you know, dirt floors, and the foods that they got from the slave owners was barely enough to keep them alive, and they were treated just, I'm going to just read just a little bit here about a story that there was some people, you know, took these stories and wrote them down and collected these stories from these people. I'm looking right now at a picture of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 slaves, people, and they're standing in front of their home, and it's just made out of wood. It looks like maybe timbers. And they're sitting, the women are standing up, and then their clothing is very terrible. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 children sitting on the ground in horrible clothing, and one young woman is reading to them out of a book, probably the Bible, but she's reading to them out of this book, and I'm pretty sure that these slave owners did not want these people to know how to read. They didn't want them to know how to write. You know, they were nothing but to them, they were nothing but, you know, chattel. They were like anything that this person owned. You know, he owned cattle and sheep and chickens and all this, and he owned people. And there's this Southern Carolina slave, Lewis Bishop, said that to maximize productivity, punishment for infractions would be delayed until rainy days when the slaves wouldn't be working. I'm going to read, but I'd like Sonia, could you go ahead and play that second song so I will have a little more time after the song to talk about this a little more?
Coming right up. Stay tuned, folks. There's more show coming.
Thank you. I know the song is there.
Courage we know well, as with they held the line at Peekskill on that long September day. We will hold the line forever till the people have their way. Hold the line, as we held the line at Peekskill, we will hold it everywhere. Hold the line, we will hold the line forever till there's freedom everywhere. There was music, there was singing, people listened everywhere. The people, they were smiling, so happy to be there. While on the road behind us, the fascists waited there. Their curses could not drown out the music in the air. Hold the line, as we held the line at Peekskill, we will hold it everywhere. Hold the line, we will hold the line forever till there's freedom everywhere. For the grounds were all surrounded by a band of gallant men. Shoulder to shoulder, no fascist could get in. The music of the people was heard for miles around.
Well guarded by those workers, their courage made us proud. Pull the line, pull the line. As we held the line at Peekskill, we will hold it everywhere. Pull the line, pull the line. We will hold the line forever till there's freedom everywhere. When the music was all over, we started to go home. We did not know the trouble and the pain that was to come. We got into our buses and drove out through the gate. We saw the gangster police, their faces filled with hate. Hold the line, hold the line. As we held the line at Peekskill, we will hold it everywhere. Hold the line, hold the line. We will hold the line forever till there's freedom everywhere. Then without any warning, the rocks began to come. The cops and troopers laughed to see the damage that was done. They ran us through a gauntlet to their everlasting shame. And the cowards there attacked us, damnation to their name. Hold the line, hold the line. As we held the line at Peekskill, we will hold it everywhere. Hold the line, hold the line. We will hold the line forever till there's freedom everywhere. All across the nation, the people heard the tale and marveled at the concert and knew we had not failed. We shed our blood at Peekskill and suffered many a pain, but we beat back the fascists and we'll beat them back again. Hold the line, hold the line. As we held the line at Peekskill, we will hold it everywhere. Hold the line, hold the line. We will hold the line forever till there's freedom everywhere.
Pete Seeger, yes, we have to hold the line too against racism and fascism and runaway capitalism. I want to go back to this story, and this is by a slave, Lewis Bishop. My master was so cruel to his slaves that they were almost crazy at times. An Alabama, oh no, this is by Bill Collins. He's an Alabama slave born in 1846. He would buckle us across the log and whip us until we were unable to walk for 3 days. On Sunday, we would go to the barn and pray to God to fix some ways for us to be freed from our mean masters. Now, that's how these people were treated, not as human beings, but as just as slaves. This is I was also lonesome without her. He's talking about his mother. My mother was sold away from me. I was so lonely without her that I would often go about my work and cry and look for her return, as I was told by some of the slaves that she would be back, be brought back to me, but she never came back. Jordan Looper, born in Charleston, South Carolina, ended up in Texas with no memory of his mother or his father, who were sold separately before he turned 2. The worst thing about slavery was selling the slaves on the auction block like they were cattle, said William Haynes, a Virginia-born slave who was moved to Texas. And they say common themes from the narratives that are most slaves lived in simple dirt floor cabins, wore homespun clothing, were forced to work hard, especially the the field slaves. They would rise well before dawn, eat, feed, and milk cows, then report to the field so they could begin work as soon as the light was good enough to see. The women as well as the men had to work in the fields, chopping and picking cotton, Haynes said. The only pay was a whipping. Some masters forbade any religious practice, forcing slaves to sneak into the woods to pray and sing or risk being caught in their quarters. Other masters took slaves with them to their church. They would pray, saying, O Lord, lift the yoke of bondage of us that we may serve God under our own vine and fig tree. And O Lord, control O master's temper so he will not be so mean to us, wrote Esther Lane Thompson of her interview with Mark Slater, an Alabama-born slave who was taken to Washington County, Texas. The word of emancipation arrived with tragic results for a slave named Clara, who was told it by a white boy. Sorry, I have to turn the page here. Clara's master saw her talking to the boy and asked if she'd say anything about emancipation. She denied it. Then her master tied her across the barrel and whipped her until she died, said Looper, the South Carolina slave who ended up in Texas. The master's girls begged for Clara, but it did no good. He then whipped the boy until he died. The white boy's mother cried and begged for her son's life, but it did no good. That was a very miserable time. We were not cruelly treated, said Jack Clancy. This is after emancipation. But after freedom, I could see that slavery was the worst thing that a race could experience. There's pictures in here about, shows pictures of these people who had been beaten, their backs just full of scars. They would cut people's toes off when they tried to run away and they got caught and it would brought back. Women were sexually abused by these plantation owners. Slavery is a definitely horrible history in this country, and that we should never forget it. We should never forget this horribleness that was brought to this country of slavery. I got this magazine. I get two magazines. One's called Vietnam, and the other one is Disabled American Veterans Magazine. And the one I just got, DAV, Disabled American Veterans, they have this. This never has left any of us. They're talking about 30 years after Desert Storm. Many veterans still struggle with the long-term impact of the war and its wounds. And they're talking about these illnesses that these veterans are having and having trouble getting health care from the Veterans Administration. And we did back in 91, I believe. I think it was 91. And this was the first date I had with Laurel. We went out to the National Guard out of Oregon City, and we did a urine and saliva test for them and sent them down to California to, you know, that these people were having so much trouble. They were, and we did it. We were asked by this congressman from Michigan, I'm pretty sure it was. And so we did this testing. We did testing in our office for veterans, and these people were sick. They were sick. And not only were they sick, but their if it was a male veteran, their wife was sick, and some of these sickness, and so was their children. If they were a female veteran, it was the same thing. And, you know, we called it Gulf War Syndrome. And like I, in this article, they still talk about, you know, some of these people having these same illnesses that they've never gone away. And we, you know, we protested up at the VA to get this health care, and we did all this stuff. And one of the things I remember that they wanted us to send articles like clothing and different things that these people had brought, the veterans had brought back from the war. We had sand. We had one of the female veterans gave us her sandals. We had some shirts and different things like that. And Carolyn Mills and myself, we boxed them up along with the urine samples and the saliva test, and we sent them down to California. And we got this message back, and they asked Carolyn and myself, how did we box this stuff up? And we told them, and they said, you guys didn't wear gloves and masks? And we said, no. And ever since then, I can't be around chemicals. Like if I go into a store, say Home Depot or Lowe's or something like that, I can't go to that aisle, those aisles that have these chemicals, because it just, the smell, and also my skin, if I'm not really, really careful, I can get my skin will start getting little red spots on it. And so I just can't be, I can't be around these chemicals. And that all started after Carolyn and I had boxed up these clothing and sent them down to California. The women were having spontaneous abortions. Their bodies were rejecting these fetuses. The husband's sperm would burn the wives. It was just a horrible thing that was happening to these people. And it hasn't finished. They're still having trouble. You know, they're still having trouble, these people. Like this guy said, this never has left any of us. You know, join the military. Yep. Join the military. I got this article, and it was very, very interesting. I don't know how to think about it. Groups asked Supreme Court to declare the all-military draft unconstitutional. You know, Jimmy Carter, about 40 years ago, he stopped the military draft, and it became a all-volunteer army. But still, when guys turn 18, they still have to, you know, register for the draft. But people are saying, these people are saying, I don't know what groups they are, they're saying that it's not just males that should be drafted. It should be the women should be drafted also. And people are coming up against them. You know, there's these groups saying, don't draft my daughter. It's okay to draft her sons, but don't draft her daughter. I haven't really read enough about it to really, you know, talk about it. I know that the draft at the time was really unfair, that the rich boys got away and didn't have to go, you know, like Trump and his ilk. You know, they didn't have to go, you know. So, and they were blaming Obama. It was really interesting, you know. They were, some of these right wingers were blaming Obama for Vietnam and all this stuff, and Obama was just a kid, you know, when the draft was going on. So these fascists, these right wingers, you know, they try to make all these excuses up about military and you know, It just gets me angry. This gets me angry. The draft was unfair, but I don't know how, you know, I'm going to read more up on it and come up with, you know, I don't like the draft anyway, but the draft did get some people in it that would never have enlisted to go to war. The anti-war movement really, really, really didn't kick off until they started drafting college kids. So, but the poor kids were already being drafted, the Hispanics, you know, the poor white kids, the poor Asian kids, the poor, you know, Latino boys. It was just a horrible, horrible thing. There's two things that nearly one in five defendants in the Capitol riot cases served in the military or were in the military. Protesters, criminals entered the Senate chamber on January 6, 2021 in Washington, D.C. Congress held a joint session today to ratify President-elect Joe Biden's 306 to 232 Electoral College win over Trump. Pro-Trump protesters have entered the U.S. Capitol building after mass demonstrations at the National Mall. As violent mobs descended on the U.S. Capitol on January 6, lawmakers and aides, wherever they could, waiting for the military and police to arrive, but many of those who stormed the Capitol were military veterans themselves and active duty, who had once sworn to protect the Constitution. In fact, an NPR analysis has found that nearly one in five people charged over their alleged involvement in the attack on the U.S. Capitol appeared to be to have military history. NPR completed a list of individuals facing federal or District of Columbia charges in connection with the event on January 6th. Of more than 140 charged so far, a review of military records, social media accounts, court documents, and news reports indicate at least 27 of those charged, or nearly 20%, have served or are actively currently serving in the U.S. military. To put the number in perspective, only about 7% of all American adults are military veterans. So that's a pretty high number. Several veterans are charged with violent entry and disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. One of them is Larry Rendell Brock Jr. The Air Force veteran was photographed in military-style helmet and tactical vest, carrying flex cuffs inside the Capitol. He posted on Facebook that he was preparing for a second civil war, according to documents filed in federal court. In the weeks after Biden's victory, Brock posted, "We are now under occupation by a hostile governing force. I see no distinction between a group of Americans seizing power and governing with complete disregards to the Constitution and invading forces of Chinese communists accomplishing the same objective," Brock wrote. He ended his post with reference to the oath taken by members of the military against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Some veterans who allegedly stormed the Capitol are still serving in some capacity. Jacob Fracker, 29, was an infantry rifleman in the Marine Corps and deployed to Afghanistan twice, according to the Pentagon. He now serves in the Virginia National Guard, according to widespread news reports. Though he was not among the service members deployed to Washington ahead of the inauguration, he is also a police officer in Rocky Mount, Virginia. With him at the Capitol on January 6th was his colleague from the Rocky Mount Police Department, Thomas Robertson, 47, who is an Army veteran, also facing charges. Federal prosecutors have also alleged that multiple members of the right-wing extremist group, the Oath Keepers, took part in the insurrection at the Capitol. The group has been known to target and recruit active duty members of the military and veterans, in part for their specialized skills. Among those charged in relation to the storming of the Capitol are Thomas Edward Caldwell, a Navy veteran and alleged leader among the Oath Keepers, Donovan Ray Crowell, a Marine Corps veteran. They have been charged with conspiracy to obstruct electoral college vote, among other alleged crimes. And if you watch that, what was going on that day, you know, they were using flagpoles that either had the American flag on it, the Confederate flag on it, or the Trump flag on it. Attorneys representing those facing charges did not respond to NPR's messages seeking comment. Okay, rooting out extremism. Roughly one-third of active duty troops said they had personally witnessed examples of white nationalism or ideological-driven racism within the ranks in recent months. According to a 2019 survey conducted by the Military Times and Syracuse Institution for Veterans and Military Families, troops said they had seen swastikas being drawn on service members' cars, tattoos affiliated with white supremacist groups, stickers supporting the Ku Klux Klan, and Nazi-style salutes between individuals. These are active duty people on military bases. At least one individual charged in connection with the assault on the Capitol allegedly embraced that extremist ideology. Timothy Lewis Hale Cusinelli, 30, is a Navy contractor who had worked at several naval stations, weapon stations, with a recent security clearance, according to court documents. He is also an Army Reserve Sergeant with the 174th Infantry Brigade and an avowed white supremacist and Nazi sympathizer. Some experts argue that the military has not done enough to tamp down on extremism. That's kind of interesting. It just tamp down, not kick them out. Well, charge them first and then kick them out. I saw this I watch these right-wing stinking news shows just to see, you know, what they're talking about. And this one talking head fascist was saying Biden in the military is trying to kick out these great patriots that are serving this country, who were at the Capitol trying to take back our government, you know. Yeah, trying to take back the government. There's a picture here of these two veterans that I just talked about, the police officers that we're in the Capitol building, and they're standing in front of a statue hall in the Capitol. Just military. I'm gonna throw that one away. I'm sick of it. Okay, how much do we got? Oh, we only have 8 minutes. I always want to start with the stuff I've been working on all week, and then I get hooked on something else and I start the show, and then I come up short on what I really wanted to talk about. This distinction between membership and active participation in white supremacist and neo-Nazi organizations for a U.S. military member is deeply flawed. I wish that the following did not need to be said. This is written. Who wrote this? Oh, it doesn't say. In the past 75 years, the United States has fought with varying degrees of vigor human rights abuses, incurred almost 300,000 casualties to defeat Nazi Germany. Decades of demonstration and divisive legislation followed to eradicate a very codified racism that inspired Adolf Hitler. You know that Henry Ford, Ford Motor Company, was a Nazi sympathizer. And so was Lindbergh, the first guy to fly across the Atlantic. He was also a sympathizer. Yet months ago, defense officials testified to the House Armed Services Committee that membership in white supremacist and neo-Nazis group does not constitute grounds for separation from the military. Distinguishing between membership and active participation, these officials stated that neo-Nazis can't serve in the ranks of the same military that liberated Buchenwald and Dachau. With extremist organizations, however, any distinction between membership and participation is a spurious one. Indeed, mere membership in such group is incompatible with the military values. U.S. military ethics. A proudly traditional organization, the military boasts no shortage of creeds, oaths, value systems capturing its ethics. Here the important distinction between ethics and morals emerge. The military ethics, the principles established by social system, define right and wrong for service members. Conversely, service members' morals comprise their personal principles. Ideally, a soldier's morals align with the military ethics. If not, consequences will likely arise. At best, these consequences remain internal to the soldier. Disagreeing with the military ethics, he probably experiences cognitive dissonance. Perhaps he harbors his disagreement quietly, but maybe he externalizes his beliefs acting out against the military norms and regulations. By distinguishing between membership and active participation in white supremacist and neo-Nazis group, these defense officials make two troubling assumptions. First, they assume that these members will not inevitably externalize their dubious beliefs, but why should these extremists receive such latitude? Evidence indicates that white supremacy in our ranks has risen over the past few years, you know, like the Trump regime. Over one-third of service members who responded to the 2019 Military Times survey reported evidence of white supremacist and racist ideology in the military, up from 22%. Respondents described specific manifestations of white supremacy, such as racist language, swastikas drawn on service members' cars, white supremacist affiliated tattoos, and KKK paraphernalia. These disturbing trends demand a lower threshold for action against service members affiliated with such organizations. Given the very nature of white supremacist groups, active participants logically proceeds from membership. White supremacist is an inherently revisionist ideology seeking to change the status quo. Adherence supports policies that reverse changing demographic and the laws of an absolute white majority. How much time we got? Oh, we don't have enough time. I have worked all this time to get all this, and I think racism is an important thing we need to talk about, and racism within the military, as you've seen from what I've read so far, is a real problem. a real problem, and we cannot stand back and let this to keep going. The military needs to discharge these people with dishonorable discharges, deny them of all their benefits within the VA, and should be ostracized from the general public. We'll be back, Sonia, we'll be back on March 19th at 9 a.m. And there it is. Thank you for listening, brothers and sisters.
Yes, I even killed my brothers and so many others, but I ain't marching anymore.
Science fiction movies and TV shows.
For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. Oh, I must have killed a million men, and now they want me back again, but I ain't marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the wars, always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with the saber and the gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese skies, set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leaders screaming when they close a missile plant. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it reason, but I ain't marching anymore. I ain't marching anymore.
Mr. Nana now, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM. You don't know.
Have you gotten your flu shot? It's never too late to protect yourself, your family, and your community against the flu. This year, it is more important than ever. Black and African Americans, people of color, pregnant people, people without health insurance or a regular healthcare provider,